CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Sarah Maslin, the Brazil correspondent for The Economist magazine. A special section in The Economist in these last days focuses on all the aspects of Brazil, this very large and, at this point, what you'd have to say, potent country with a troubled past and a present that is non-transparent. We begin with remarks by a young politician in the Brazilian legislature, Amaral, Ms. Amaral. Sarah presents a remark by Ms. Amaral that seems ironic, and then it possibly opens the door to what Brazil worries about. Ms. Amaral says, every politician has to choose whether to work for the inside or the outside. Sarah, a very good day to you. Congratulations. Please explain Amaral's inside and outside. What does that mean in Brazil's terms? Good day.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to talk to you. So Tabitha Amaral was this sort of wunderkind politician who got herself elected at age 24 and has been part of this little group of kind of progressive politicians who are trying to change, a pretty traditional and clogged political system. And, you know, when she says that, she means that at the end of the day, Brazilian politics for, a lot of reasons dating back to the 1988 Constitution is often criticized for being, more about keeping itself in power and keeping politicians in power than for society. And, part of the problem is that elections are really expensive. The district size is an entire state, which means that, more than 30 parties are really competing and campaigns are costly. So often the kind of same political clans end up getting a lot of the resources and then getting elected. And then once these politicians get to office, they just have all of these privileges and perks that make it pretty easy for them to stay. They have got all these advisors. They have a big pot of public money that they can spend on their campaigns. They even have a special legal protection that makes it really tricky to prosecute them for corruption or, other crimes when they're in office. And also the kind of design of the political system is sort of unmanageable. It's a hybrid between sort of U.S. style presidentialism, where the president is the main figure responsible for proposing policies and managing the budget. But then because there are sort of 30 plus parties in Congress, many of which are not kind of ideology driven, but rather pork and patronage driven, the only way that the president can get things done is by keeping them happy with government jobs at all levels of state firms and ministries, and with spending a good chunk of the budget on sort of vote winning projects like paving roads and painting schools, as opposed to long-term reform that can often be really tricky. So, Tabitha is trying to do things differently, but she suffered a lot of pushback, including from her own party.
The vivid president of Brazil, Bolsonaro, you report that if the election were held today, this is the next presidential election, it would be between Bolsonaro, the present chief executive, and Lula, the former chief executive, who I believe spent some time in jail and was prevented from running in the most recent election. How are these choices seen, these polls in Brazil? Do they represent factions, parties, or just power, as you described it?
So what you're looking at in 2022, now that the convictions against Lula were thrown out, partly because the corruption, anti-corruption judge that tried him turned out to have a political agenda and really overstepped his bounds, including advising prosecutors. Now that Lula can run again, you're looking at a really polarized election, but also one that is looking much toward more, but so you're looking at a really polarized election, but also one that is looking much more toward the past than toward the future. On the one hand, you have Bolsonaro, a former army captain and long-term backbench congressman who got elected in 2018 basically because of a trio of traumas, an economic recession, a massive corruption scandal that tainted most of Brazil's political parties, and violent crime and kind of deteriorating public services. Rising crime and deteriorating public services that kind of came as a result of the economic situation. And he presented himself as sort of a Trump-like outsider who could shake things up. He's very fond of the dictatorship that Brazil had in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. He came in and has really failed to do the reforms he promised in a whole lot of ways and has put democracy in threat. But then you have Lula, who is also a really controversial and complicated figure. He was president during a commodity boom where millions and millions of Brazilians came out of poverty. But he also, failed to sustain the kind of economic growth over time that Brazil needed to really tackle issues like poverty and inequality. His successor kept spending even once the commodity boom ended, which sort of drove Brazil into this recession. And then the thing that people, despise him the most for, his party was really involved in this kind of what they call Lava Jato or car wash corruption scandal, whereby Petrobras, the state oil firm, was accepting bribes from private construction companies, which were then kind of funneled to different political parties in order for the PT, Lula's party, to manage its policy goals. So you've got these two figures. They each have a kind of a strong base of support, about a third of Brazilians. And then they also have really high rejection ratings. And so, the conversation in Brazil right now, both among policy people, but also the public, is we don't want these guys. We want someone who can give us an alternative, who can give us plans for the future, how to get ourselves out of this mess. But, the problem is that third person hasn't really presented himself yet. And the danger is that there'll be kind of a handful of centrists who won't be able to get ahead of Bolsonaro and Lula in the second round, and it'll end up being this kind of polarized election.
And then there's the pandemic, the cloud over the planet right now. The news out of Brazil for some time has been that Bolsonaro has either ignored the pandemic or minimized it in some fashion, leading to enormous casualty rates. I'm sure that we'll learn more and more about the people who've suffered from it. But the economy now is looking to be stronger than it has been in the past. The Bolsonaro administration continues to ignore the virus and also ignore the vaccine. Does Lula have anything positive to say about the vaccine? Do any politicians? Because, Sarah, the vaccine has saved America.
Well, there's two things you mentioned. The, awful pandemic situation, and then this economy that is kind of hanging on better than people expected. Those are actually linked. Because Brazil has so colossally failed to keep people at home, even during a second wave back in February, March, and April that was far worse than the first, the economy has actually kind of managed to keep moving forward, partly because people didn't stay home and stop, going to work and going to stores. However, when you look at the kind of first quarter GDP figures, consumption by families is still sort of subdued. And so you see, the price of commodities is going up in the whole world. That's really helping Brazil, which is still a pretty commodity driven economy. And so there is some hope that the economic performance will be better, but it hasn't reached people. What you saw is a sort of slashing of big stimulus that helped people last year. This year, there's no more money left. The fiscal situation in Brazil is really getting quite worrisome, with kind of public spending on public servants and, you know, some of these things we talked about before is sort of going through the roof, and families are sort of suffering. And so, of course, the solution here is the same one for every economy. They need to get vaccines. They need to deal with this pandemic once and for all, instead of just having this kind of up and down and up and down that we've been living through in the past year. But they kind of missed the boat on that one. Bolsonaro not only didn't buy vaccines, but actually encouraged people not to take them, joking that they would turn people into crocodiles, or that because the main vaccine that Brazil has right now, the CoronaVac from China, because it's from China, that, you know, somehow it's dangerous. And so right at the time when you're starting to see people elsewhere get back to kind of normalcy, Brazil is really still suffering. Bolsonaro is kind of alone on this one. Most politicians, including governors, are scrambling to try to, you know, stick shots in people's arms and kind of get around the federal government. But they've lost so much time because the president and, you know, all of the organization capacity and simply, you know, the money to buy vaccines took about 6 months to come around to the idea that this was really the solution. So I think, you know, the economy looks like it's doing better. They're slowly starting to vaccinate people. But really, the next election is going to depend on how quickly that happens. If, you know, by the time 2022 rolls around, people are still really suffering from the sort of effects of the shutdowns and, you know, the slow control of this pandemic, Bolsonaro might have a really hard time convincing people. If Lula can say, hey, when I was president in the 2000s, things were good. Remember, our public health system was actually expanded. We managed to deal with, you know, other kinds of diseases. If Lula is able to make that nostalgia work for him, he might have a shot. But I also think, you know, both of them are going to have to present a plan for how Brazil can do well going forward. You can't just win people on the past.
Sarah Maslin is the Brazil correspondent for The Economist magazine, reporting on this special issue about Brazil in The Economist. We're going to the Amazon next. Amazon, 60-million-year-old Amazon, and what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.